Hello and welcome, movie people. We are here at the podcast where we talk about movies because movies is what we care about and we eat, sleep, and drink movies. I am Elisa Ivers. I'm here with my co-host, David. What's your last name, Steele?
Yes.
I almost forgot for a second, but I got
yes.
it. And this is the podcast Real Talks. And we're so excited to have you if you're listening. Thank you. And if you are listening, you should probably follow us because it's rude if you don't. And I always say that, but I mean, I feel like the very least you could do is to follow us. I feel like that's really nice and it's just kind. And then if you do, then we'll get more followers and then we can have really cool guests. So that's really nice.
Yeah. So hello everybody and welcome to Real Talks. What she said about following. No, so before we get going today, I thought that there was a couple stories I saw that I thought were absolutely necessary to touch upon before. So, you know, let me back up a little bit because I said that last week we were going to do horror movies. I didn't realize the Black Phone came out last week instead of this week. So we're going to actually, we have a... somebody that just had a birthday, filmmaker that just had a birthday, and that's whom we're going to speak about. I'll talk about him in a minute. And so the two things that I wanted to get off the top was, I don't know if you saw this, but Top Gun just passed $1 billion in the worldwide box office.
Now, can you put this in perspective with, like, maybe another huge movie that did really well like this?
Well, so the few that, you know, I can think of off the top of my head is Spider-Man No Way Home. I mean, No Way Home had legs for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it just stayed in the box office. And what this movie has been able to accomplish in 32 days... it's only been out 4 weeks, is astounding. And, you know, I would even go so far as to say that Top Gun is, I'll go with so far as to say Top Gun Maverick is one of the better sequels that we've had along the way, and I've said that before.
Above and beyond better. I just, overall, like, as all of the different points and...
And so, yeah. And so, the other thing being is this. Tom Cruise himself has made, and this puts things in perspective, Tom Cruise himself, as a star, has made $8.5 billion at the box office. Worldwide.
Through his career.
Throughout his career.
Yes.
The fact that we don't see this type of thing anymore. So I'll give you an example, okay? Marvel. They've got 39 movies, you know, with everything that's happened, but most people think of the Infinity Saga and Phase 4. That's made $26.6 billion. Tom Cruise himself, by himself, has made $8.5 billion
with
about 11 movies. So you're talking about a third of the movies and almost a third of the money. Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
And it's still made another, you know, $4.5 million this last week, and it's still going to keep going and going and going until, you know, this is going to leave theaters in probably a couple weeks, right around when Thor, you know, Love and Thunder comes out. And stay tuned for our preview of that happening next week. But the other big story I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to get your opinion on. So Bob Chapek, who is the head of Disney, he's the CEO.
Yeah.
He took over for Bob Iger. Bob Iger ran Disney for 20 plus years, beloved CEO. Everybody had, I mean, it was just, you know, rainbows and unicorns with him.
Yeah.
And with So today it was announced from the Hollywood Reporter that he got a 3-year extension by Disney. And the board of the directors had voted him unanimously to give him the extension.
Okay.
My question to you is, after the whole Scarlett Johansson debacle, and that's what it was, called what it is, debacle, and how he treated her and that whole thing, do you think he deserved it?
Do I think that he deserves an extension, is what you're
Yes.
asking, correct?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel as though now I don't condone what the studio did to Scarlett Johansson, and for the and maybe you can give us like a one sentence explanation of for the people who are listening of what happened. Basically, she wasn't really given what she felt she was due. Isn't that right?
Okay,
For streaming?
correct. Correct. So what ended up happening was she had clauses in her contract in what's called the back end. Okay, so if a movie makes so much money during the opening weekend, you get X amount of bonus. And this is what they did with Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot for Wonder Woman, the new one, as the pandemic began. So we fast forward, okay? She was supposed to get a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was Black Widow was brought, instead of having a exclusive theatrical release,
Yeah.
it was put on Disney Plus. And what Disney did was they said, okay, well, we're going to charge you, the consumer, $30 to not only, mind you, this is plus the subscription you're paying.
Right.
So you're paying $30 to watch the movie, and then you have to wait another 6 weeks before you can actually watch it for free on Disney Plus. Okay, it makes $80 million and it opens the theaters to another 80. She then turned around and sued Disney for breach of contract, which in turn she was right.
Yeah.
And the reason why I have such a problem with it is because Chapek basically, one thing that Bob Iger did, it was great with talent. One thing that Bob Chapek did, it was character assassination. And he basically called her greedy. He called her self-centered. He called her a number of other things we won't repeat on the show. But the point is, he basically threw her under the bus. Instead of
Okay.
giving her what was due to her, he said, fuck you. So what she did was she put up the middle finger. And she took him to court.
Is that, are they
She
still in court?
then sued Disney. No. So she ended up suing Disney, and eventually, after much, arbitration and everything else, it came out that she was right. But here's the caveat, okay?
What?
Here's the caveat. The caveat is this: Dwayne Johnson, during the same time, okay, there was a little movie called,
Was it
Jungle,
the
no,
yeah?
Jungle Fever
Jungle
or
Cruise.
something. That,
Jungle
okay.
Cruise.
Thank you, Jungle Cruise. Nonetheless, they renegotiated his contract. So he got the back end deal. But she didn't.
Yeah. You can't
Now,
do
why is
that.
she, not getting the same deal that he is?
Because, well, I mean,
Yes, so.
I don't want to chalk it up to, what everyone thinks I'm going to chalk it up to, which is that women are paid less generally, and
Yeah, so.
that is a fact. But what I'm surprised he was unanimously voted back in because, well, okay, so let's put it this way. Maybe this is the sad truth, is that it should have been a PR nightmare, and it kind of was, but it wasn't that much if you think about it. It wasn't, I feel like it should have been a bigger deal. And because it wasn't, he's voted back in. And I do think
And
that's the reason. And no, I don't think he should be allowed because, like it was such a clear injustice to somebody who has held up her end of an entire Marvel, franchise. And that's just like really, that was her last movie. Honestly, it was just kind of like, spitting in her face. And that's, I mean, I doubt she'll ever work for Disney again after that. So it's kind of this thing where I feel like they, for some reason, he just feels like she's expendable and that's not okay. So no, I don't like that he got like voted back in, but that's just unfortunately apparently where we're at, is that we're still not outraged enough. And so he's still here.
Yeah, no, and you're right though. You're absolutely right. You hit the nail right on the head, because the fact is that even if the worst part about the whole thing is two things. Number one, he never even bothered to say I'm sorry,
Of course
because in
not.
his heart of hearts, he believed he was right.
Or
And the sec
he did know that he was wrong and he is just a prideful SOB.
and that just makes him a worse person
Yeah, and
at that point.
I believe he knows he's wrong. I just don't think he'll ever
And
admit
the second thing is, what does that say about the board of directors?
it. Yeah, this is very true.
You
This is
have a
very true.
bunch of people behind desks pushing paper, maybe they're wearing $3,000 suits. But what is that saying about the board of directors, that they are giving him a another contract to basically do this? Because here's the thing, mark my words, 3 years from now, when we're talking about this again, if this happens again, people are going to get very, very ticked off. And I'm not talking about inside Disney, even though there was turmoil there. I'm talking about shareholders.
Oh, so
I'm talking about people that are going to ban going to movies. I'm
do you
talking about
think
people that are
that?
going to ban going to Disney stores. I'm going to
Oh.
talk about people banning going to Disneyland because of this clown.
Okay, so I have a
So,
question. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you
oh,
either.
no, go ahead. Yeah.
So is there outrage right now? 'Cause like is it's not just us talking about it. It's like there are people out there that are actively like, no, he doesn't deserve this, or
No. I mean, this has been under the radar for so long with Black Widow, and the movie's been out for so long, and you can watch it on Disney Plus, that people don't care. It's like the thing that makes the back page of the newspaper
yeah.
type of thing.
So why do you think
Yeah,
that?
he got a new contract, fine.
Yeah, but
Big
why do you
deal.
think people will care in 3 years if they don't care now? You think he's going to speak
Because
over more people?
I do.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. If it happens once, okay. If it happens twice, it's a coincidence. If it
Yeah.
happens three times, it's a pattern. And for what he said and how he said it, and he knew he was right, or he knew he was wrong, so to speak, and he admitted he was wrong, and he had to pay her more money. Instead of ponying up the money he, if he had ponied up the money she was deserved and put it to bed and said, you know what, Scarlett, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
And we would have
But
respected
did,
him more to be like, you
and the
know
bad, publicity.
what? Yeah,
The
all of it.
bad publicity
I
for
know.
days and weeks and months. And now you're going to pay her?
More.
Come on. Exactly. More.
Yeah.
Anyways, I
And
digress because we have other things to talk about.
we gotta move on. But yeah,
So.
it'll be interesting to see what he does with his extension and whether he will prove that he deserves it or if he's gonna just, you know, continue to try to screw people over, specifically women. So we'll see.
Yeah. Anyways, enough about the bad. Let's talk about the halfway decent or the good. So we are now talking about a filmmaker that celebrated his 56th birthday yesterday, and that is Mr. J.J. Abrams.
I did not know he was this old for some
I
reason.
know, I didn't know
And I
this
mean,
either
that's
until
not even
today.
that old, quite frankly. But I
You know,
just, knowing what I know
he's a
now, that like he wrote a bunch of really a lot older films that I grew
Yeah.
up with and you grew up with, it makes sense that he's in his late
He's
50s.
only a couple years younger than Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is actually, Tom Cruise is going to be turning 60
Now,
on July 9th.
I think that they put Tom Cruise away in a cryo chamber every night, and I think that he goes into hypersleep when he's not doing a film. We don't really see him. The Scientology Church, I'm sure that they have that, and
Yeah.
they're keeping him fresh, you know?
Yeah. He's going to be here when he's 100.
100%, and he's going to look
Yeah.
exactly the same. So, all
Yeah.
right,
Might.
J.J. Abrams, what's
So.
a quick little synopsis, just so that everybody knows who he is?
So Abrams was born in New York City, and so his actually he his parents were very distinguished. His father was so he's Polish. He is a Polish and Jewish descent, and but his mother was a Peabody winning television executive producer,
A
and
Peabody
his
one?
yeah
Cool.
his and not to mention an author and a law academic, okay. His father worked at CBS in the
Oh.
flagship and moved his way up. So he was like born right into one of these entertainment
He had
that,
entertainment.
households.
Yeah. Okay.
His mother worked, so he that's what he did. His mother was a real estate agent while he went to school, and actually JJ attended Palisades High School out here in California. And went to school, and so when he was 18, he eventually rolled into Bronxville, New York, and he followed his father's advice because he wanted to actually make movies from a very young age. It's important that you go, this is what his father said, it's important that you go off and learn what to make, how to make movies, rather than learn what to make movies about than how to make movies.
Wait, okay, wait, hold on. I think that we turned it around. So wait,
Yeah, so
it's more important to
yeah,
which one's more important?
it's more important that you go off and learn what to make movies about than how to
Okay,
make
there we
movies.
go. Okay, then how to? I
So,
agree. Well,
yeah.
and this shows in his career as he became somebody that wrote some really, really big films like Forever Young with Mel Gibson and
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Ooh, and a young Elijah Wood was in that. One of my favorite movies ever, actually. Like, I grew up watching that. It was incredible. And then also the movie that you mentioned earlier, it off the podcast of regarding Henry with
Yeah.
Harrison Ford, and you
Yeah.
wrote those. I
Yeah.
wonder how
And
old he was when he wrote those.
so he wrote, so he had to be, what, 91 was 34 years ago. So you're talking about, what, 28, 29?
No
So,
way. No,
he started his.
87 was 34 years ago because I'm 34.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. There you go. But, well, let's say this. He had his first job at 16. He wrote music.
Okay.
So that just tells you he
He
wrote music for
composed?
a film. Yeah, he
Oh,
actually. So speaking of composing, he actually wrote the theme for Felicity.
so random.
Yeah. So he ended up writing for the Felicity, and he ended up, yeah. I mean, he wrote a lot of. He wrote the opening for Alias.
Oh wow. Yeah, actually, and didn't he do Alias?
Yeah, he was an
Yeah,
executive producer.
that's one of JJ's, yeah, that's one of his shows. Now,
So,
I feel like what he's most known for is Lost. I think
oh,
Lost was
absolutely.
like kind of a swan song situation show-wise. I think that Lost changed ha like television completely. I think
Yeah.
that Lost was the first show I ever watched where you truly didn't know if your favorite character was gonna die. Like
Yeah.
every other show that I ever watched, I was like pretty sure that if they were a main character, they were gonna stay alive, and JJ would just kill him off. And I mean,
So
they had the most compelling storytelling. I don't know how to explain like how they
no,
did.
I know what you edge of your seat. So it's interesting. I actually watched a TED talk with him.
Ooh.
And it was a very fast, so you can go back. It was in 2007, and it was called A Mysterious Box. And so he, when he was growing up, his grandfather was basically, he would show him the ins, so he would take apart and show JJ how these things would work. And because he was curious. And so there was a little magic shop in where he was growing up. And so he went to this little magic shop and he bought this little, he actually brought it, and this was in 07. He still didn't, I'm sure he still hasn't opened it all these years later, but it was a little box he bought for $15, and it reminded him of his grandfather, and it taught him about how mysterious things can be. You know, in certain, and he had certain examples. And I just thought it was fascinating all those years ago that he would do that, and all these years later, he's still
Well,
doing that.
and Lost is like that was basically the entire premise of the show was mystery, like unfolding of things we don't know. Not only that, but he's an incredible storyteller when it comes to like studying of characters, like how we slowly got the background of each character as we went, and then we understood why they acted the way they acted. But we might not have understood it, 5 episodes ago when they did something crazy, but now that we know what happened when they were a kid, it's like now we get it and we have empathy. And it's like this thing where he built out all of the characters so that we cared about certain characters. Also, I would say that he wrote one of the best, most cunning villains ever with well, I know you haven't seen it, but the character Ben, anybody who has watched the show can tell you that it was one of the best written villains I've ever experienced. Anyways.
No, so he actually directed a couple episodes of Lost, and he was a writer for 3 episodes. And so
Oh,
actually,
only
yeah, no, only 3, because he did everything.
Well,
You
shoot.
know, he created, he wrote, he was an executive producer, he composed the theme, so he was just, you know, he only had time for a certain amount of things. Actually, if you want to go back and listen to the interview I did with Brad Rochefort, he talks all about character. And we talked about this in a previous podcast, and you can go back and listen to it. But it's just amazing when you actually watch a character on screen, and then if you think about it, you go, wow, okay, yeah. And so all of these elements are in there, and that's what makes appealing characters to
Well,
moviegoers.
you want to either you want to know about them, you want to empathize with them, you want to feel like you see yourself in some of them, and maybe even see like the uglier parts of yourself in others, so that you can be like, oh, okay, we're all screwed up. And basically, Lost was just an entire airplane of screwed up people that crash landed on an island. So that was the premise. What he now he also did Star Trek. Did he do all of the new Star Treks?
No, so he did. So he directed the he directed the first one. He directed the first one, and he didn't write it, but he directed it and he was the producer of it. As far as he didn't write Into Darkness, but he directed that as well. And he was a producer. And he didn't write and he didn't direct the third one, Beyond, Star Trek Beyond. I liked the first Star, I liked the reboot of Star Trek. I thought it was good because just because of the stories. I mean, you knew the stories of Kirk and Spock and McCoy and all these guys and all these characters, but they were done differently. But the one thing I loved was the lighting. The way he
Oh,
lit scenes
interesting.
and just the abundance of light he had, it was just amazing. And so he actually made it a point, and he's actually come out and said this, that he wanted to make sure every single person, every single character, even if they were on set screen for only a few seconds, he wanted to make sure every single person was on screen.
I
So I
love
thought that was
that.
pretty cool.
I love that. Yeah. No, I loved that. Honestly, I thought the casting was really well done. I'm not a Trekkie, so I didn't know. I only knew the very basic things from when I was a kid and I watched like the movies that would come out. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't, I felt like the first one was really good. I don't remember if I really loved the second one, and I don't know if I saw the third one.
No, I mean, Beyond was not. So, there was some backlash. I mean, for Into Darkness, I mean, I remember going to see, when I went to go see The Hobbit, I went to go see it with somebody, this is all these years ago, and I got to see, and it was in IMAX, and I got to see the first 9 minutes of Star Trek Into Darkness. And it was pretty cool. And I, you know, so it stopped right at the scene where, there, you know, the father was looking at him and he's like, "Who are you?" And then he's, you know, we see Khan and then cut.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was really, so there was a lot of critics, they responded to the film well. But there was one of the director of the original one called it a gimmick, essentially. Because, you know, so anybody who has seen, I don't know, have you seen Into Darkness?
Yeah, I think I did. No, not the third one?
No, no, it's the second one.
Oh, okay.
With Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes. Yes,
okay. So anybody who hasn't seen the film, what they did was it was a quick role reversal. So anybody knows in the 1980s, in the 80s version, Spock dies. And the subtitle of the third movie is The Search for Spock. So at the end of the second movie, he's put out into space, and that's that. In the third movie, they go out and find him because they need to do something. In this movie, okay, you have... what you have is Kirk dying. And Spock.
I don't remember this. Wait, this was one of the ones that we watched?
So Spock, so basically Kirk saved the ship, went into the core. He did what he needed to.
Yes.
And he died of radiation poisoning. And Spock, he was on the outside. And there was a scene where he says, you know, you are my friend, because it's a replay of what happened in the beginning when Spock was in the volcano and he saved him. But so getting back to what I was saying, the director actually called it a gimmick, and he was really upset because it was not, once again, you had whitewashing, even back then, with Ricardo Montalban, you know, and that's what made him so good, because at the time, if you remember, you might have been a little girl, but at the time you had Fantasy Island, which was one of the biggest shows on television. What ended up happening was, you know, he actually took that role and went and played Khan in the sequel, and it was huge. So when they put Cumberbatch in there, there was a lot of backlash because
that's wild.
So
do you feel like that was warranted, the backlash? Do you think that was Trekkie,
so, like, yeah, so about it, 2 years after the film's release, Abrams said this about the film. There were, quote, "There were certain things I was unsure of. Any movie has a fundamental conversation happening during it. And for Into Darkness, I didn't have it. The weakness of the plot wasn't anyone's fault but mine. The script was a little bit of a collection of scenes that were written by my friends. And yet I found myself frustrated by the choices and unable to hang my hat on an undeniable thread of the main story. So then I found myself on the movie basically tap dancing as well as I could try and make sequences as entertaining as possible. I would never say that I don't think that the movie ended working, but I feel that it didn't work as well as it could have had I made some better decisions before we started shooting." So it's interesting to see somebody to actually go back and, you know, critique themselves and say, you know what, I would have done this differently had I actually been more reliant. And to say that the script was bad, he didn't blame anybody but himself.
That is, like, honestly the most respectable thing you can do, is to be like, I'm an artist. I made decisions. Looking back, I don't know if I'd make the same decisions. Like, that's why he's probably great, is because of this. And then, okay, so he did Star Trek.
So this leads into, we go into the 2000s. He founds this little company called Bad Robot.
Yep.
Which, you know, Paramount, you know, and him get together. And he is then an EP. Well, first of all, one of the very first films in anything could have been better than what it was the 2006 Mission Impossible 3.
Ooh.
I personally like that film.
I loved it. I thought Mission Impossible 2, but I've loved everyone after.
I thought Philip Seymour Hoffman killed it.
Amazing.
Killed it.
That's the best villains ever. That was incredible.
And so, yeah, so he ended up directing that.
Oh, I didn't know
that. And that was actually his directorial debut.
Oh!
I was really interested in seeing that. So Paramount, and now he's been on the last five or six films, well, four films, he's been an EP or an executive producer on Rogue Nation, on Fallout, on, you know, Ghost Protocol. He's been an executive producer. So he's definitely had a hand in it, but he's not all the way in it. Chris McQuarrie is still the director, and he's been writing with him. And I mean, these movies are getting bigger and bolder, and, you know,
a bigger budget every time.
Yeah. So we were talking off camera, and this new Dead Reckoning Part 1, which I believe is going to be the end of this.
Oh,
because any if you look at any major franchise,
when there's
like Hunger Games, like a, you know, Deathly Hallows, whatever. And when they split it up in two parts, that's basically the end of it.
Anyways,
what she's getting at is the reported production budget for this is $290 million. So think about it like this. Infinity War was $250.
Oh, what? Really?
Infinity War and Endgame were each $250.
It's a lot. Wait, is this what was it, $280?
$290.
$290 for just part one? Whoa! Okay, that's really cool.
So,
that's really interesting.
You're talking about a movie that has to make at least, and I say at least in quotations, at least $800 to $900 million worldwide just to break even.
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be a $1 billion film? We'll see, because of what just happened with Top Gun.
I almost feel the Top Gun success will translate.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's going to launch this.
Absolutely.
Because
we get closer.
Yep.
Yeah. And as we get closer to the release next year, and as soon as another trailer comes out with all these unbelievable stunts that he does, they're going to go, yeah, we need to go see this. So it'll be interesting too to see what it goes up against.
Yes,
because whatever it goes up against, I mean, obviously it's going to win the box office. But if it goes up against some, you know, crap films, it's going to kill it four or five times over.
100%.
So he actually founds Bad Robot with Paramount, so that he's an EP on a lot of these Mission Impossible movies, as I said. But the big one. And I really believe he got this movie because of the success of Star Trek, was the 2015 The Force Awakens.
Yep.
And this movie was let's put it this way. It's the unbelievable this tells you something. This had a production budget of, and when I say this, I mean The Force Awakens, had a production budget of $300 million. Yeah, $306 million.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me.
$306 million.
Yep.
Okay. Opening weekend. This is before Infinity. You got to understand now. This is before Infinity War and Endgame. Okay, $247 million.
I can't believe though that. Well, maybe I can. Never mind. I was about to say something silly.
As it is the number one to this day, more than Avatar, more than Endgame, more than Spider-Man: No Way Home. It is the number one domestic box office of all time.
That makes sense.
$936 million. Now, I'm going to tell you how. So, there's something behind this. So there, when I went to see it, okay, I remember sitting down in the theaters with some people, and I watched the first 15 minutes, and I went, "Oh my God, this is a the 50, this is a carbon copy of Star Wars."
Yep.
A carbon copy. So actually, so okay, so he was the first director to make $2 billion since James Cameron, of course, Avatar, right? So a lot of people, including George Lucas, called it too similar to Star Wars.
I don't see how he couldn't have noticed that it was pretty much exactly the same as the first start. Like, how did he
Because he
know?
didn't have a hand in it. You got to understand something. He didn't have a hand in it. George Lucas passed it off. He was done with Star Wars after the.
No, I'm talking about J.J. Abrams.
No, okay.
How did J.J. Abrams not look at it and go, "Oh my gosh, we made Star Wars A New Hope again"?
Because that's what he was doing. So, to answer your question, and the short answer is this: if it's not broke, you don't fix it, right?
Sure, and I get
So,
that, sure.
all you were doing is changing the characters. So this is what he actually said. He responded to these complaints. And he said, quote, "What was important for me was introducing brand new characters using relationships that were embracing the history that we all know to tell a story that is new. To go backwards is to go forwards." So what he did was he took the settings, he took everything about it, and he said, okay, we have to take a step back in order to move two steps forward. And that's what he did. I remember, well, a couple things. Number one, I remember writing a piece that I was on the computer one day and I saw something on Yahoo. And I remember seeing this piece from Yahoo Entertainment about how incredibly expensive these tickets were getting, and these people were scalping these tickets. And so I did a little digging, I did a little research, and I found on eBay, Craigslist, a couple other sites, these tickets were going for upwards of $2,000 opening night.
Oh my gosh. But
And I
honestly,
wrote
yeah.
and I wrote it and I wrote a piece and saying that the prices for these are out of this world. And I go and I talk about that there's no way that they should happen for three reasons. Number one, it's not like you're going to a concert, for example, and you're sitting as close as you want, so you're going to spend more money to be closer to the talent.
Yeah.
Number two, okay, it's one night, okay? So it doesn't matter. It's not like they're going to be there night after night after night. It's one night.
Yes.
And number three, no matter where you sit, and by the way, it's illegal in the state of California to scalp tickets, so you can't do it for more than the face value of the ticket. But I said, number three, shame on these sites like Craigslist. And listen, I'm all for capitalism. I'm all for capitalism, but shame on these sites like Craigslist and eBay that will not remove these people for basically scalping and price gouging these people, and people paid the money. That, so in a Monday Night Football 2015, that trailer aired. Do you know, within seconds, I'm not kidding, in seconds, that site Fandango crashed.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Crashed.
Yeah.
So when they had, and they had already come out and said, look, we're going to make three of these things.
Yeah.
So I remember doing a little background and contacting Fandango, and I, got a generic response. But, and also, I remember when The Force Awakens, which he was an executive producer on, came out in 2017. Guess what happened? It crashed again because they didn't think there was going to be enough servers. Okay, we digress. A couple years ago, 2019, he writes and directs it. Okay. What happens? It crashes again because it's the end of the trilogy and people
Yeah.
want to see what happened. And
Well,
by the way, yeah, go ahead.
no, I just like, I feel like it's, but you, like, it's not necessarily because JJ did it. I think it's because it was Star Wars and
No,
the way
I
JJ did it.
totally agree with you.
Like,
I
but I mean that, so wait, did JJ just like for the people at home, did JJ do all of the Star Wars or just the first?
No, he was an executive producer. Okay, so here's how it went. He directed and produced the first one. He wrote, directed, and produced the first one. Rian Johnson, and this is where people got, and I still don't know this day, there was a lot of backlash for The Last Jedi. It's a good movie. It's not great.
It's
Some
not.
people absolutely love it.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of backlash.
Yeah.
Because Rey was supposed to be, and he's even come out and said in previous interviews, that she was supposed to be a nobody.
Yeah.
Well, what happens
That
in.
was like everybody's hope almost, was that she'd be a
Right.
nobody from.
So, okay. So, therefore, what happens when Rise of Skywalker comes out in 2019, and I saw it twice. I mean, once, both in theater, and I saw it once opening night. And I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to go back and see it again just so, you know how you try to watch a movie a second time to see if your opinion changes.
Yeah.
So I did, and it didn't change. It was one of the worst retcons I've ever seen in my life.
Wait, what? Ret what?
So a retcon is basically taking away the story of the previous. So when you have like three movies like this, a retcon is, it's basically taking away, or it's not, it's,
Are you trying
so
to?
in a film or television series, a piece of new information that imposes on a different interpretation or previously described events typically used to facilitate a dramatic plot shift or accountability for an inconsistency.
Okay,
Okay, a
you have to,
revision.
like, can you say that in English? Like, what is
So,
it basically
okay,
like
so
the
it's.
movie that ruined everything they built in the last two?
Okay, exactly. So
Okay.
essentially, so what happened was that what happened in The Last Skywalker was completely taking everything away from what happened
It
in The
was
Last Jedi.
left field. Yeah, it was left field
Right.
shit. And
And
somehow the end
so
came back. Like, what?
it was, yeah, and it was a complete retcon. And it just, it was terrible. And the fact that Palpatine was still alive and
Like, yeah.
Rey and Rey and what's his face fall in love and he kisses her. I mean, just
Well, and
the
like,
memes out there are hilarious.
they can pass
But
things to each other, like, somehow.
it's
Yeah,
no.
they did a bunch of new things, and I was like, I don't,
It was
this isn't at
just
all the same place that we thought it was going to be.
horrible. It was just horrible. And it was one of the worst I had ever seen. And now when that happens, now look, it made $1 billion and we both agreed it made a lot of money. Fine. But the thing is, when you have a movie that's universally, I won't say hated, but despised,
Pretty
okay? And
much.
people,
I mean, the prequels were
okay?
also universally despised.
But there was a story behind it. Okay. So that being said, people were tired. People were tired of the Star Wars, and can even call it Star Wars fatigue.
Yeah.
Because you have so much stuff coming out. You've got The Mandalorian,
Yep.
then you've got the Book of Boba Fett. Now you just had Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Terrible.
How
I think
much.
people were having fatigue. And then, of course, right when they start doing all of this, Disneyland comes out with Star Wars Land. And
Yeah.
so now I
The
realize, though, that that's like far more for, I think, the up and coming generation. I mean, I went there when it was kind of just starting, and I got to do like the big ride because no one wanted to do it.
Yeah.
So I just went on the Solo in the Solo tunnel. So I got to do it right away and whatever. And it was fun. But I mean, like, it just, I agree with you. I just feel like they're beating it to death. And why can't we wait for things anymore? Like, why can't there be more thought process and more like story development?
Well, and this is where, so this becomes, now we have, Andor coming out, a moment in like a few months. So to answer your question though, people, and this goes back to one of your favorite directors that we're going to be talking about in a couple weeks when we spoke about on Lightyear, Mr. Waititi.
Yeah.
So he is actually going to be doing a brand new, and you actually brought this on the roundup.
I did.
So the story that she referred to was he is going to do a Star Wars movie completely and totally separate of anything having to do with the Skywalker saga.
Like zero. I'm hoping for zero. Absolute zero characters we've already have ever heard of. None.
So that
new character. Like I want. Only
so it will be very fascinating to see.
It will be.
What story he comes up with, because that's going to be so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, I know we really didn't touch. So, yeah, it was, Abrams has done a lot. And then, so we'll see what he's going to, what's coming up for him. But, okay, quickly, coming up next week, we're actually going to be doing the Thor Love and Thunder preview. I hope she joins me because, so that's going to be fun. We got Flashback Fridays coming up this week. This week's going to be probably one of the best movies of the bunch, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy. That's going to be a blast. So Ann and I are going to be talking about that. Mm-hmm. Mom Mondays. I still have not forgotten about Mom Mondays. I'm looking to try and get this up and running for August. I'm making a list and checking it twice.
Well, I was just going to
So it's one of those things I might be able to get Brad for a couple of these, so we're going to have to look at scheduling. But that's going to be on Anchor, and that's going to be on one of the things. That's going to be a subscription service. That's going to be $7 a month. It's going to be a good time there. And then coming up, later on this month, at the end of the month, I'm going to do Brad Pitt movie. Well, first of all, we've got Nope. That's going to be Jordan Peele movies. I got to sit down and watch Get Out and Us. And then at the end of the month, we're going to be doing Brad Pitt movies because of Bullet Train, and this might, he's hinted, this might be his last movie. Ooh, and then this might actually be interesting. And so we got a ton of stuff for the rest of the summer.
That's exciting. So, yeah. Well, and we'll be here. We'll be here doing all the movie things. And I just feel like it's going to be a jam-packed year. And so me and David are going to be cooking up some great things for the rest of the year, especially I think that it's fascinating to always watch how things stack up before the end of the year, because there are obvious, hot seasons and there's low, like nothing's going on seasons.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting.
And we will do an end of the summer. We're probably going to try and get Ryan back, but we will try and do like an end of the summer thing and what we thought was good and not and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter at Wannabe Rounder. She can be found on in Decaduto in Instagram, and she can be found on Instagram at
Elisa Ivers, ElisaIvers. And on TikTok, even though that's not, it's for curly hair people.
Yeah. Follow us on Facebook too.
Yeah.
Shoot us both. Shoot me a DM. Shoot me a couple of messages. Yeah. Tell me what you want to see. We'll see if we can't make it happen. We do have a Patreon. I'm not going to get into it. Just go to patreon.com. Just type in Real Talks in the search bar.
I mean, the arts.
And
this is
$3 a month is a cup of coffee. It's a cup of coffee at Starbucks. And she's even going to write you a poem.
Write you a haiku if you sign up for at least $3. I'm very good at them, so it'll be a treat.
All right,
guys. Thanks so much for joining us.
And until next week.
Until next time.
I'm David Steele.
She is. Oh dang it!
All right.
We did our best.
And you've been listening to Real Talks.
Okay, bye.